Why don't we start off with a bit of your history? How did you start off playing the drums, and how did you get into the music business?
I started playing, like 20 years ago, I guess, when I was like a kid. You know, I started like school band, and, you know, that kind of stuff, and did the drum line growing up and everything, all through school. And then I started, I didn't start touring until I was about 21. I started, my first touring band was called the Samus Theory, and it was like a Phoenix-based hard rock band, and that's the band that, really cut my teeth in, and just kind of learned how to tour and just kind of learned the ropes and everything, and spent 2 great years with them. And then I started playing with Brian Head Welch and from Korn and doing his side project stuff, and then became Love and Death. And, that was, that band was my life for years. And then just started, branching off and doing the session drummer thing. And from there, and just, but pretty much just kind of like just, each year trying to branch out a little more, work with some new people and, get some name out there, whatever. But it's just like the session drummer thing is definitely been my, route since then. But yeah, so yeah, I guess, just started, got in the business, I guess, at 21, and just kind of started touring then. And so.
Nice. Now, I got to ask, every time I talk to a drummer, I ask this question. And how were you able to start on the drums? And I asked that because when I was a kid, I wanted to be a drummer. I ended up being a guitarist, and I've been playing since I was a kid. But I wanted to be a drummer, and then my dad was like, "Well, we can hear the drummer from 2 streets away." So no, how did you get into drums and everything, and how did you start with that?
I got lucky with a family that was really cool and supportive with it. And I started by, checking out some local, high school, concert band, performances and stuff. And I was like, the drums look like they're the most fun. And so when I was in elementary school, I gave it a shot. And then, I just kind of, fell in love with it, and ran with it from there. And it's like the only instrument I really know how to play, and, never really, I knew never could do anything else. Mm-hmm. Videos help too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, being a musician myself, I love talking about gear. So let's talk about what you're using.
I play Crush Drums. It's a company from Tampa, Florida. It's they're great. Wonderful drums. And then I'm playing Fabian, but I just actually on this last tour, I used a set of Saluda cymbals that were from the Seasons guys used, and I love them. So I actually been checking those out lately. But just the standard DW hardware, and then just DW 9000 pedal. That's my favorite pedal, to this day, still a favorite. So and then hooked up with this company called Excel Drum Sticks. So they're just I was a Vader for a long time, but I just started playing with the Excel sticks. And that's it.
Nice. One more gear question. I get this from a lot of drummers. Triggers for or against for acoustic drums?
I'm for them. I like them. I like anything that makes it, that enhances the sound, or just kind of makes it a better performance or show or anything. It's just I like the triggers because sometimes especially if you're doing club tours and little bars and stuff, like, you never know what you're going to get as far as sound, and it's like, that's certainly a way to make sure that, like, the kick, is always heard or something. Because, you can hear it. It really takes away a lot, so it's just, I like them.
Yeah, because kick drum, I always think, like, kicks and lower end toms are kind of hard to mix in different rooms.
Right, yeah.
You
don't want to lose it out. You don't lose out on it.
Yeah, especially the kick drum. I mean, do you find that sometimes the kick drum will sound flat or too low in the mix if it's in a smaller venue?
Yeah, big time. Big time.
I
definitely muffled or you're buried, or something. And it's just like, it's such an important part of the rhythm, And so I think it's just, I hate that when it's, can't hear it,
Yeah. Now you broke your chops in bands like UO4, Mo Nasty, and Samus Theory. How did you hook up with Brian?
I had known the guy, kind of like my mentor in this business, the guy who produced his first record, Ralph Patlin. He's a great producer from out here. And anyway, when it came time to put together a solo band, he called me for, and asked me if I wanted to audition. So I just kind of, I was like, of course, so I went and I auditioned, you know, with him and a few other guys who were, you know, auditioning for their parts too, you know, and guitar, bass, and everything at the same time. And we just played through like a few of the songs, and that was it. So, it was because I knew, I had known Ralph, you know, from other things and, you know, prior to that. So
nice. Now Brian had quit, Korn. I'd read a long time ago, part of it was because he'd found his faith. Some people say, and I think this argument's so stupid, and I want your opinion on it, that some people say that faith and metal don't mix, but I kind of tend to think that music can represent anything you believe in.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not preachy or anything like that, or it's, you know, shoving it down your throat or anything, but it's like, it's just the lyrics can be positive and you can really apply them to anything in your life, you know, and it's just, you know, it doesn't always have to be about, you know, just ugly things, you know, but it's like, I like the, you know, our lyrics were definitely representing, you know, like just, you know, how, you know, low points and dark places, you know, like your life, and then just, you know, getting out of them, and just, you know, I don't know, you know, I like any kind of, you know, music that can make you give someone a little bit of, you know, hope or positive feeling, you know, or something like that, so. It can still be heavy, you know?
And don't you think also, like, as metal in the 80s, well, 70s actually, 80s and 90s had a bad rap for Satanism, drug use, you know, all that other mm-hmm. stuff. Don't you think it's kind of taking it back, too?
No, yeah. Yeah, I am. Yeah, exactly. So, and that's the only way that some people are even, you know, would even hear about, you know, positivity or something, or, you know, lyrics that might influence them to, you know, change their life, you know, or, you know, just, you know, find a way out of something. I don't know, you know what I mean? So it wouldn't happen without, you know, being played through metal, you know, so it's just, you know, it can be, you know, it could be whatever you want it to be.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, how do you think metal has changed since, well, bands like Korn and I would say even Limp Bizkit, you know, Static X, so on and so forth, have brought on the new metal scene. How do you think the scene has changed since then?
Well, I missed that time, you know, because, like, it seemed like people were all about the bands, you know what I mean? Like, they loved every aspect of it. They'd buy the CDs, they would buy the merchandise, they would, you know, I don't know, they're just, like, either they're always out at shows or anything. Now it seems like, you know, the pay-by-the-song thing, you know, it's just, you know, it's less about the actual band itself and just more about the song you buy, whatever, and it's like people don't really even, you know, care to even look at who is actually making the, you know what I mean? Or, you know, who, you know, what band it is, or, you know, find out about, you know, details, band member names, you know, just like, I don't know. Actually, that was cool to me, you know, when I was getting into bands and stuff, was finding out everything about them and, just kind of, you know, just like in their whole, you know, finding, you know, all their music and, you know, whatever, just, and it just seems like I don't see that very much anymore, but.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say, I've heard one person, I got a friend of mine who said it really fine, really perfectly, that it's the difference between getting in your car and taking a ride to the store or taking a trip to LA. You know, I mean, it's like, well, case in point, like my first album I ever bought when I was a kid, and I was real young, and when I bought it was Ozzy Osbourne's Tribute. You know,
Okay, cool.
The fact that I was able to hear it from start to finish means more to me if I had bought just the songs that I thought I was going to like.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, you miss out on a whole album of music because, you know, if you buy by the song, whatever, you know, it's a journey, you know, like the start to finish from an album. You know what I mean? It's supposed to be like a, you know, that's the fun part, is going through the whole thing.
Now, and also, don't you think, like, it's not just the audio, I mean, it's not just the music, this might sound stupid, but I used to even like the smell of the records and the cassettes.
Oh, big
you
time.
Know, and reading,
yeah,
dude, reading
brand
the,
new, yeah, brand yeah, new, yeah.
Yeah, and then reading the, yeah, the inserts and everything, and you know, if you remember, sometimes they'd give you a sticker or something to put on your, you know, your window or something like that, and, I mean, it's just like all the little stuff like that that they went through that you just can't get on iTunes.
Nope. No, you cannot. Yeah, it takes away some of the feel, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you this too, because you're in a position where you are, you know, in all effect, major label now. I mean, you are like, you know, in the major leagues, you know, of music now. So from that point of view, what do you think of like how the internet has changed things, not just with like iTunes and Google Play and Amazon, but with file sharing and social networking?
You know, the social networking, I know it's a necessary, you know, it's necessary to get your music out there now and everything. And I think, you know, with file sharing, I mean, that's just too, you know, it's become too easy. But, and then the social media stuff, you know, I think it kind of helps and hurts, because, like, you know, also there's no, I mean, there's definitely no privacy, you know what I mean? Like, you know, whatever, because, like, you know, so that's one thing that's kind of a negative, you know. But, you know, there's no mystique about the bands anymore a little bit, you know. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a, I don't know. It's just like, you know, like personal pages and stuff like that. I don't know. Like, I don't really, you know, that's what I'm trying to get out of that stuff. But as far as like, you know, file sharing and everything like that, and music, like, now you can find anyone's music, you know, it's just for free. It's just, so, I mean, which sucks, because, you know, now it's, it's like, you work for free, I guess, you know. It's just like with your, everyone can just get your stuff now, you know. So,
yeah, exactly. It's kind of like a double-edged sword. I mean, you see all these ways that you can promote yourself, but then you see how promoting yourself can hurt some aspects of the business side of it. So now let's talk about what you're doing now. You just got off tour with Red, right? For a while, or
Well, we our last tour that I did with Red was we went out with some Adelita's Way, and we did a, you know, club tour, and then we did some festivals throughout the summer, and then I'm getting ready to leave with them again here in a couple weeks, and about another week and a half actually. And then I just got off tour with I was playing for this band called Seasons After, and I was filling in with them, and they needed a fill in for about a couple weeks, so I jammed with those boys, and they were great. Great metal band, very underrated metal band. You know, if you get the chance to check them out. But now I'm getting ready to leave with Red again, and we're going to be pretty much touring through till December, and we're going to South America in November, and you know, just some club tours till then, and then we'll be off for Christmas, and then we'll head out on something called Winter Jam, which will be like an arena tour. That's like it's like 47 cities, I think. And so that's on the plan for those guys. And I just did the new Digital Summer EP, and we're gonna, you know, be getting some shows with them again. And so I'll be playing with those boys again. So just trying to stay busy, you know, and doing the country stuff in Nashville, and I'm actually getting ready to head out there on Monday. So, yeah.
Nice. So you're also in the country then as well, then?
I love it. I love country music, and it's very much so. And like, I love Nashville, and it's become like my second home, because Red's based out of there. And, you know, so I just, it's been fun to learn how they do things, and how like the Nashville way of doing things, and like be around those great players, and down on Broadway, and I love it. I love that, you know, whole vibe. And country's a great genre.
Yeah, and well, in Nashville too, has got the best session players in the world, like, hands down. Like, the most talented session players in the world. The funny thing about Nashville is, too, is every time I've been down there, I've brought a friend of mine with me, and it's like, oh, it's going to be all country. No, it's not, dude. It is like Seattle in 92. There's like everything there.
Yep. Yeah, it really is, man. It really is. And it's a very cool, fun vibe, and it's a beautiful, thriving city, you know, and it's that genre is really, taking a hold over today's music too. Like, you know, now, you know, I like to see it, because they can, all these, now all these rock players are, you know, we're playing country now and stuff, and they, you know, it's kind of like the new Nashville look now. And I like it because it is popular, you know what I mean? And it is, you know, there's definitely lots of work and lots of opportunity, and just, you know, it's a definitely a thriving market, you know, so I love it.
Yeah, and also I think country's changed a lot in 25 years. I mean, it's not the whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
It's not whiskey ain't working anymore, you know. I mean, it's
yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, Bon Jovi has done country albums now. Who would have thought of that back in 95?
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So, do you think country has changed like where to the point where it's like almost rock now?
Oh, big time. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't like it, you know, because I do like it. I love all the new country stuff. I love the old stuff, too. But, it's definitely less like rock bands, you know what I mean? Like playing, you know, with backing these guys, you know, and I love it, you know, because the image is there. I like the, you know, it's like the, you know, the tattooed rock bands, you know what I mean? That's what they look like. And I love it. So it's, like for me, I like it, but if for people who like, you know, the old school country values, whatever, like the old school, I can definitely see where, I mean, it is not the same.
Yeah, you know, like the troubadours, like George Jones and all them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, right. Yeah.
Yeah, but they deserve the Hall of Fame, though, because, I mean, they started it.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Definitely. But I think what happened was is when Garth Brooks came along, it started going to what it is now.
Yeah.
You know? True. So, I mean, because he, I mean, even when his first album came out, it had a lot of rock in it.
Right.
You know? So,
yeah.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit. How do you feel, or how is your career as a session musician versus being in a steady band? Which do you like better and why, or do you like both?
Yeah, I like both. I like being able to, just be able to do both, you know, I'm a part of Red, you know, and I'm a part of Digital Summer too, but it's like, I love being able to go in our off time and, you know, play with different people and just new experiences and new styles of music, or, you know, that's what makes you grow as a musician, you know, and be better. And the session thing is really cool because it's just, you know, you never know what you're going to, you know, who you're going to meet or who you're going to end up playing with, or, and that's exciting all itself, but also it's like, you know, it's exciting to, you know, have to learn someone's whole, you know, album on the, you know, within like a day or something like that, or, and, you know, come in and play it. And it's fun learning people's, you know, learning people's music and, being able to just get, you know, start getting passed around and, you know, name going out there as that. And, you know, that's definitely the road I'm definitely pushing for, you know, towards. So,
now when you come into a situation like that, like with Red, like when Joe quit and you came in, do you approach it as a session player, or do you approach it as a member of the band? Like, and what I mean is, do you put your own thing into it when you're playing the music that was recorded with somebody else?
Just a little bit, yeah. Just a little bit, yeah. Just, you know, because I really like what Joe did on his albums, you know, and so there's no reason to change those parts. And then, like, on the new album, like, you know, A View to Rage, like, that's the first album I've been able to be part of, you know, so, you know, it's definitely got a little bit more of my flavor in there, but it's, you know, our styles are pretty similar to begin with, you know. So, as far as that, you know, just maybe subtle things, you know, like, but it's for the most part, I like to keep it, you know, by the book, because it's just, you know, it's what the fans want, you know, and that's what they want to change up, you know, with the song, you know, the songs are great for a reason, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, you were talking earlier about with session playing, you like it because it's fresh and everything. Do you feel as time goes on, you might prefer things like that? Because the reason I say that is because I just read an article in Rolling Stone about Keith Richards, how much he hates playing half of the songs that the Stones play because he's played them 50 million times.
Right. Yeah. And that is another thing. Yeah. So, it's exciting to, you know, play with different people, because then it gives you a different appreciation and perspective of each band you're playing in, you know what I mean? So, like, in each thing you're part of, you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, then you'll appreciate things about one that you don't get with another, but like, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of cool to think of it like that. You don't really ever get sick of anybody, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, to all the drummers out there, what's your practice regimen like? Like, when you've got like a month off or 2 weeks off, do you have like a kit set up where you just practice, like, you know, like,
oh yeah, I have two, I'm blessed to have two awesome studios here in the Phoenix area. That's where I live. And, so I have, two drum kits set up and they're in very cool parts of town and 24-hour access to them. So, I'm minimum, like 6 days a week is normally my, I try to, just stay on there like minimum five, and then just, I'm really big into warming up and like rudiments and like the drumline stuff and like practice pad stuff. So I spend like 30 minutes to an hour on that. And then just as long as you get, 2 to 4 hours in on the kit, it's just, that's just the way it is, and just, you gotta stay sharp, it's just, it's like, more than a couple of days off. And I feel like I start to, I have real rust building up, Like, there's never any more than like a day or two off. So, and plus I get mixed time at home, go by faster too. When you're just like, on the strict practice schedule and everything. So, cause you want to get back out there on the road,
Yeah, exactly. So. Well, I mean, cause one thing I learned, being a guitarist that, the pentatonic scale is the most basic scale on guitar, but you still have to practice it. It doesn't matter if you've played for 10, 20, 30 years. I mean, if you don't practice stuff like that, even like you said, the rudimentary stuff, you're going to get rusty.
Right.
Yep. So now another drummer question is too, is like, I've talked to drummers that are from like the Ringo Starr school where play for the song. And then I've talked to people that would be what I call the Neil Peart camp, which, is all flash. Now, where would you put yourself and why, and what do you think is more important, the song or the rhythm?
Both. Both. I am very much into like flash and showmanship, and that's definitely so I'm definitely a little more on that. Like I like putting on a show and being a performer and everything. But the session drumming has kind of opened my eyes to like being in the studio. Let's say for that that kind of opens your eyes to how sharp a little. Details, finer things like, flipping up the cymbals or, what part of the bell you're going to hit, it's little things like that, so it's kind of cool to just kind of stay on top of both. But I mean, if I had to, choose, I definitely put myself on the more of the showmanship flashy type.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think drummers are a little bit of both though? Because think about it.
Yeah.
Like if somebody asks you to be in a Beatles cover band, the flash isn't going to work, or if you got asked to be in a Rush cover band for the night, that's totally going to work, So do you think it comes down to the song?
Yeah, absolutely. And what you're doing, whatever the job calls for, have both in your arsenal, all sides of you. That's another thing, like being a good session drummer requires you to be like kind of like a chameleon almost, like you gotta be able to blend in with whatever, whatever project you're part of.
Yeah, exactly. Now, as a drummer too, though, I actually had somebody like ask him this, even though it has nothing to do with anything. Like some drummers like will totally change their kit around and stuff, and like an example would be like, okay, like would you like you would consider the ride cymbal like an essential part of a kit, right?
I use mine more of as a crash ride. I mean, like unless I'm doing country stuff, so mine's like kind of like another crash cymbal.
The reason I ask is because like some drummers will like have certain setups, and then there's a standard setup, where you have like a certain set of floor toms, a certain set of mounted toms, you have the ride on one side, the hi-hat on the other, and then a china, so on and so forth. Why do some people totally forego that? Like an example, the example that I was given actually was Lars Ulrich, totally threw his ride cymbal out, and that's on half a Ride the Lightning.
I definitely like to keep my similar type setup, but it's actually funny because sometimes whereas I'll keep my normal. I have my ride, two high crashes, china and hi hat, and then just my one mounted tom and two floors, and that's like the usual setup. But then sometimes I'll do gigs where I'll just have like the one floor tom, and then I'll just have literally just two high crashes, and then that's it. That's all, and then the hi-hats, and that's it. Like, no other cymbals at all, like no low ride or anything. So it's just kind of, you know, I don't know. I just, it depends on how I'm feeling, and it depends on what, you know, what kind of, what band I'm, you know, what band I'm playing for.
Yeah. You know, so. Yeah. Now on Of Beauty and Rage, I mean, you got like a full thick sound. I mean, I was like really impressed. I mean, it's got a, you know, it's like, you know, a Here in the Next Room, you know, type sound, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, and what that makes me wonder is how long do you spend like in the studio when you're about to record? Like, how important is it to get the right drum sounding? Like, I know we were talking earlier about triggers and stuff, is that something you think about? I mean, like just mixing the drums with the mics and everything?
Oh yeah. That's the whole first day. It's just, you know, especially when we're doing Beauty and Rage too, like that was just the whole first day. It was just getting tones and cymbals set up and like what cymbals, you know, sounded right. And just like the, you know, what samples we're going to use and everything, and just kind of getting everything placed right. And then, like, that's the entire first day. So then the next day you come in and start tracking, you know, it's like, so it's very important. It's a huge part of it.
Well, how deep do you guys get into it? Because, like, I've heard stories of people, like, actually detuning the drums and tightening the spring on the snare to the point where it might snap. And, you know, I mean, Mick,
well, taking, I try to tune it anyway. that's what I do anyway. Yeah, we had this rental company came in and they brought in a nice beautiful DW with these, you know, beautiful Zildjian cymbals, and it was pretty much just kind of going through them. But then Rob Graves, the guy that produced it, he just picks out the samples he likes, you know, and he'll just kind of get it as, you know, get as close to it, and then that's just the sample he will use for the entire record, you know. So once we have it, then we have it, you know, and we have to stop every other song and kind of tune them, you know, back, whatever, and just because they fall out of tune. It's just tedious, you know, every song after every getting, you know, every track done, you got to go back through and retune it, you know, and just start over. So
nice. Yeah. Now, if you could pick like 20 years from now, how you're remembered, like whose style would you want to be most associated with, or associated with your own, or if associated with your own, how would you want to be remembered?
You know, that's, you know, my favorite, you know, some of the guys I like the best, you know, like, you know, Tommy Clefetos, who played for, you know, Rob Zombie and Ted Nugent, and now he's in Black Sabbath and stuff. He's got a similar, he was a big influence on me, you know, my playing and everything. So, I mean, that kind of career, just kind of like a, just remembered as a hardworking, you know, just like, you know, just persistent, you know, hard hitting, flashy drummer, you know, just, I don't know, just a good entertainer, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He's good. I mean, he's good, man. So, So now what do you have coming up? I mean, what's up for the next year? I know you're talking about going out with Red here in a few weeks. What else do you have going on?
We're doing the Red stuff, and we're going to get some stuff going with Digital Summer again here once we get the album. It's, you know, the album is in like the mix just now, so then once that gets back, we can start doing some shows with them. And I'm also playing, you know, I do some stuff with you know, Against All Will with Jimmy Allen from Puddle of Mud. You know, he wants to get some stuff going and start jamming out again. So I don't know, just like, you know, primarily just playing with Red, but, you know, then, you know, every, getting other things going too, you know, just constantly have something going, you know what I mean? It's some, you'd be playing constantly.